Welcome to the deep dive, where we plunge into what I sometimes think of as the unseen engine, maybe the digital heartbeat of our modern world.
Yeah, it really is. We're talking about the infrastructure, the stuff that stores and processes, well, all our data.
Everything from, backing up your family photos at home, all the way to the really cutting-edge tech that's powering AI industrial systems.
It's everywhere. And understanding how we manage it, what's coming next,
Yeah.
it's pretty crucial.
Exactly. So today we've got a whole stack of your sources. We're looking at product news from big names like Assister, Q&A, P, Synology, Team Group, Shuttle, Patriot Memory, Silicon Power, Kingston, Kioxia, SK Hynix, IBS, Axiom Tech.
And some key market analysis, too, from TrendForce and Golem. Lots to unpack.
Right. And our mission, as always, is to pull out the really important bits, the insights you need to know. You might hear some surprising things and hopefully get a clear picture of what actually matters in this fast-moving tech space.
Okay, so where should we start? Maybe network-attached storage? NAS seems like a good place. It's getting smarter, more accessible.
Good call. Let's kick things off with Assister. They're doing something interesting with transparency. They've updated their product status page quite significantly.
Oh, yeah. What's new there?
Well, it's not just a minor tweak. It looks like a really big deal for customers and resellers, too. You can check live status, the support phase, warranty info, availability.
Across the whole range, home stuff up to the big enterprise racks.
Exactly. The whole lineup. It seems really geared towards improving customer support, but also deployment planning. Lifecycle planning is becoming so important.
That makes sense, especially for bigger deployments. Knowing exactly where a device is in its life cycle, that helps IT managers plan ahead, budget better. Is this like Assister trying to stand out, or are others doing this too?
That's a good question. It feels pretty strategic. I mean, the NAS market is crowded. Offering this level of clarity, that could build a lot of trust, Take some guesswork out of buying IT gear.
Yeah, definitely. It could almost set a new standard, what people expect from manufacturers.
Okay, shifting gears a bit. Q&AP. They seem to be attacking data management from a couple of angles, specialized hardware and also cloud integration.
Right, the dual approach. What's first?
Let's look at surveillance. They've got this TVR AI 200. It's a 16-channel PoE smart NVR.
PoE, so power over Ethernet.
Yeah.
Built for retail, small, medium businesses.
Yeah, exactly. And it's packed with AI analytics, stuff like intelligent event detection, people counting, facial recognition.
Okay, AI and surveillance isn't totally new, but what makes this one stand out?
Well, the design seems focused on efficiency. Direct PoE camera connections, so you don't need extra switches. That simplifies things.
Okay, so less hardware, easier setup.
Plus, an isolated network designed for security and centralized management with their QVR surveillance software. They even say you can do a quick offline setup in under 10 minutes.
Under 10 minutes offline setup. With all that AI, though, is it actually easy for, say, a small shop owner to set up? Or do you still need an IT pro?
That seems to be the goal. They're really emphasizing the intuitive setup, even offline. Suggest they want to make powerful surveillance more accessible, less complex for businesses, maybe without dedicated IT staff.
Makes sense. Bringing high-end features down market. And what's the other part of their approach? The cloud side.
Right, their second punch is hybrid cloud. They've launched MyQ and AppE Cloud 1. It's in beta right now.
Okay, MyQ and AppE Cloud 1 beta. What's the core idea?
It's a unified subscription-based hybrid cloud solution. Think NAS backups and object storage, all rolled into one service.
Interesting. So simplifying backups to the cloud, what are the key features? You mentioned object storage.
Yeah, and it's S3 compatible, which is great for integration, plus immutable data storage with object locking.
Immutability. That's huge for ransomware protection, right?
Yeah.
And compliance.
Spot on. Once the data's written, it can't be altered. Big defense line. And they also mention 180-day user activity monitoring. How does that fit in?
That's really important for auditing and forensics, especially in regulated industries. If something bad happens, like a breach or ransomware, that log helps you trace what happened, when, maybe limit the damage. It complements the immutable storage.
Gotcha. So multiple layers of protection.
Exactly. Plus, you get flexible capacity, no extra charges for data transfer or API requests, which is nice. And they've got 13 global data centers. Starts at, what, about $8 a month for a terabyte?
Yeah, USD 8.39 per month for 1 TB. Seems pretty accessible.
Definitely competitive. Okay, so Assister focusing on transparency, QNAP on specialized NVRs, and hybrid cloud. What about Synology? They're usually a big player here.
They are. And they're expanding their disk station lineup, some powerful new models. For businesses, there's the RackStation RS2825 RP Plus StarCard. That's a 16-bay rack mount redundant power.
Beefy. Scalable too.
Yep, up to 560 terabytes raw storage, designed for business workloads.
Okay, and on the desktop side, for maybe prosumers or smaller businesses.
They've got the DiskStation DS1185 Plus Starlease. That's an 8-bay dual 2.5 gig Ethernet M.2 NVMe slots.
For caching, or maybe an all-flash pool.
Right. And it has a PCIe slot, so you can add 10 or even 25 gig Ethernet later. Scales up to 360 TB raw.
And there's a smaller one too.
Yeah, the DS725 Plus Bay, more compact, 2-bay, but still has 2.5 gig Ethernet M.2 NVMe slots. That one goes up to 140 TB raw.
Okay, solid lineup expansion. Anything else we need to know about these?
Yes. And this is a really key detail for anyone listening who's thinking about upgrading. These new Plus models, the RS2825RP Plus, NDAA DS1825 Plus, and DS725 Plus M, they require compatible hard drives for installation.
Compatible hard drives mean.
Right now, Synology's own branded HDDs, they state it's to ensure, quote, optimal integration and long-term dependability.
Oh.
Ooh.
Okay, that is a big shift. Synology pushing their own drives.
It really is. Ensures performance, compatibility, sure,
But it also locks you into their ecosystem more, right? Like we see in other tech areas.
yeah.
It's a trade-off. Guaranteed compatibility versus freedom of choice for drives.
Exactly. So for listeners, it might mean a higher initial cost potentially using Synology drives, but maybe fewer headaches if you value that guaranteed compatibility.
Something to factor into the budget, for sure. You mentioned the DS725 Plus specs.
Right, the little 2-bay one. It uses an AMD Ryzen R1600 processor that's two cores, 2.6 gigahertz base, boosts up to 3.1 gigahertz, comes with 4 GB of DDR4 ECC RAM.
ECC RAM, nice for reliability. Expandable.
Yep, up to 32 GB. And it's got that 2.5 gigabit LAN port. But unlike some others, no option to add 10 gigabit LAN via an expansion slot on this model.
Okay, so the R1600 is decent for a compact NAS, good performance power balance. 2.5 GB is good, better than standard gig. But yeah, no 10 GB might matter for some super high-speed networks or future-proofing.
Good points. And just to round out the NAS picture quickly, UniFi is also making some moves. UniFi OS 4.3.6 and UniFi Drive 3.0.9 are out.
What improvements there?
Things like support for multiple storage pools and RAID groups, global hotspot options, and expanded cloud storage integrations. They've added Dropbox, Google Drive, OneDrive.
And more coming.
Yeah, they say S3, Backblaze, and Wasabi are coming soon. So more flexibility for redundancy and backups there too.
Makes sense. Everyone's trying to offer more control, more options for protecting data.
So we've covered how data is managed at scale with NAS, on-prem, hybrid cloud. But what about data out at the edge? You know, harsh environments or when you need speed on the go?
Ah, right.
Yeah.
Industrial strength stuff. Mobile speed. That's where we see specialized SSDs, embedded boards. Getting really rugged.
And Team Group seems to be right in the thick of it with some extreme SSDs.
Yeah, they've got this P250Q M80. It's an industrial-grade SSD. M2 2280 form factor, PCIe Gen 4x4.
Built tough, I assume.
Definitely. Extended temperature range, minus 40 Celsius all the way up to 85 C. Anti-vibration tech. And speeds are pretty impressive, up to 7,400 millibeads are read, 6,800 write.
Wow, so perfect for edge computing, industrial automation, places where standard drives just wouldn't cut it.
Exactly. But then they have something even more unique, the P250Q self-destruct SSD.
Self-destruct. Okay, tell me more. That sounds like something out of a spy movie.
Hey, maybe. It integrates software and hardware data erasure methods. There's an independent destruction circuit and an autoresume function.
Autoresume.
Yeah, so even if it loses power during the destruction process, it'll pick up where it left off when power returns to make sure the data is completely gone.
Okay, so where would you actually need that level of finality?
Think high security places, military applications, maybe some industrial AI where the data is incredibly sensitive. If a device gets compromised or captured, you need absolute certainty that data is unrecoverable. It's niche, but critical for those use cases.
Makes sense. And they also got a patent recently for wide temperature SSDs.
They did a U.S. patent for M2 SSDs that can automatically adjust their data transmission rate based on temperature.
Auto-adjusting speed. Why?
To maintain stable performance in extreme heat, up to 105 degrees Celsius. Think about electric vehicle ECUs or other in-vehicle systems. Temperatures swing wildly.
Right, under the hood or in the dash.
Exactly. That heat can cause performance drops, even data corruption on normal drives. This tech aims to keep performance stable and reliable, extending the system's lifespan. It's actually a pretty clever solution for reliability in harsh automotive or industrial settings.
Very cool. Okay, sticking with specialized hardware, Shuttle has a new fanless mini PC, the XPC Nano NE 10N.
Fanless is always nice for certain applications. How small is it?
Ultra compact, like 141 by 141 by just 29 millimeters. Tiny.
Wow, that is small. And fanless means silent, right? More reliable too, no moving parts to fail.
Precisely. They're positioning it for digital signage, kiosks, quiet offices, places where 247 reliability and silence matter. It's running an Intel Alder Lake and N100 chip.
The N100. Decent efficiency, low power. Can it drive displays?
Yeah, supports dual 4K displays.
Okay, so that N100 in a fanless box driving dual 4K, that's a good balance for those kiosk or signage uses where you need the display output without the heat or noise of a fan. Smart design.
And for even more specialized stuff, we're seeing new embedded boards. Axiom Tech has the KIWI330.
KIWI330. Catchy name. What is it?
It's a super compact, like 1.6-inch AIoT embedded board powered by an Intel N50, onboard LPDDR5 memory, NVMe storage.
1.6 inches. Tiny. So for really space-constrained AI stuff, robotics, smart gadgets, edge AI.
Exactly. Flexible expansion through MIO modules, too. And then there's iBase with their MBB1005.
MBB1005. Sounds more industrial.
It is an industrial ATX motherboard for edge computing automation. Features Intel Core Ultra 200S processors, PCIe 5.0 support, multiple gigabit Ethernet ports.
A little tough, too, I bet. Extended temps.
Yep. Designed for demanding industrial workloads, wider temperature ranges. These kinds of boards are really the backbone for a next-gen smart factory, that sort of thing.
Makes sense. Okay, so that's industrial and embedded. What about mobile? Need for speed there too, right? Especially
yeah,
storage.
Definitely. And Silicon Power has something interesting, the HyperArray Micro SD XC Express.
Micro SD Express, is that new?
It's one of the first ones hitting the market. It uses PCIe Gen 3x1 and NVMe protocols, but in a micro SD card form factor.
Whoa. PCIe and NVMe on a micro SD. What kind of speeds are we talking?
Get this. Up to 900 millibytes read, 800 millibytes write.
Wow. That's way faster than regular micro SD cards, like significantly faster.
Huge difference. They're targeting professional photographers, videographers, drone operators, people moving massive files constantly.
I could see that. Game changer for workflow.
Mm-hmm.
Any other uses?
Well, it's also confirmed compatible with the Nintendo Switch 2 for high-speed game storage.
Uh-huh. Interesting tie-in. So next-gen consoles might leverage this speed. Does it work in older devices?
Yep. Maintains backward compatibility with legacy micro SD interfaces, so you can still use it, just not at those crazy speeds.
Good to know.
Okay.
Okay, any other mobile storage news?
Kingston's making their NV3 series more versatile. That's their PCIe 4.0 NVMe SSD line.
What's new?
They've added a new form factor, 2230.
The really small one.
Yeah.
Making the Steam Deck and some laptops.
Exactly. It's a compact, single-sided design, perfect for those space-constrained devices. Laptops, handheld gaming consoles, offers up to 2 TB capacity.
And still fast. PCIe 4.0 speeds.
Yep, up to 6,000 millibots read, 5,000 millibytes write.
Nice. So packing serious performance into that tiny package, it really shows the demand for fast storage in smaller and smaller gadgets.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've covered the drives, NAS boxes, the specialized stuff. But what about the memory itself, the RAM that actually powers these systems? What's the broader landscape look like there?
Well, the big story, according to market analysts like TrendForce, is pricing. DRAM prices look set to rise pretty significantly in the second half of 2025.
Significantly. Which types?
Across the board, really. DDR4, GDDR5, even GDDR6 using graphics cards.
Okay, why the jump? What are the factors driving this?
It's kind of a perfect storm. You've got supply constraints, partly because manufacturers have been cautious. Then you have surging demand, especially driven by AI needing tons of memory.
Ah, AI again. So suppliers are being careful. Demand is high. Prices go up. Who feels the pinch?
Pretty much everyone. PC builders, definitely. Data centers buying server RAM. Graphics card makers needing GDDR6. It'll ripple through.
What about DDR4? I thought production was winding down.
Some manufacturers are signaling the end of production, yeah. But it's not like flipping a switch off. DDR4 is expected to still be available, probably well into 2026. But the trend is clearly towards DDR5, and prices for both are climbing.
Hmm. If components like RAM keep getting more expensive, does that slow down innovation? Or maybe push more people towards cloud solutions where they don't buy the hardware directly?
That's a really critical point. Yes, sustained price hikes can definitely influence things. Maybe slow down some consumer hardware upgrades. Or like you said, accelerate the shift to cloud infrastructure where the provider eats that hardware cost up front. Consumers might just hold on to systems longer or get more strategic about when they upgrade.
Okay, so DRAM is going up. What about NAND flash, the stuff in SSDs?
Also projected to increase, but maybe not quite as sharply as DRAM right now. Forecasts suggest a 5 to 10% increase in NAND flash contract prices for Q3 2025.
Okay, 5, 10%. Why is that happening?
Similar factors, really. A better supply-demand balance, mainly because suppliers cut back production earlier. And they're shifting focus towards higher margin products, too.
Does it affect all SSD types equally?
Not quite. Mm. The impact varies. Client SSDs, the ones in typical PCs, might see rises of maybe 3 to 8%. Enterprise SSDs, though, could see bigger jumps, 5 to 10%, because orders there are apparently surging.
And things like memory cards, phone storage.
eMMC and UFS prices. Yeah. Probably more modest increases, maybe 0 to 5%. Smartphone demand seems a bit weaker, which keeps those prices more stable. But NAND wafer prices themselves are expected to jump 8 to 13%.
Okay. So the takeaway for listeners might be, if you're thinking about an SSD upgrade, maybe sooner rather than later.
That could be a reasonable takeaway, yeah. Prices seem to be on an upward trend for the near future.
All right, so prices are moving. What about new products? Any next-gen DDR5 modules hitting the scene?
Yes, definitely. Patriot Memory has some new offerings. Their signature line premium DDR5.
Mm-hmm.
This seems aimed at desktop users who want maybe a more refined look. Speeds up to 5600 MTs.
Okay, decent speed, focus on aesthetics, anything more performance-oriented.
They also have the signature line premium DDR5 CKD. That stands for client clock driver.
CKD, what does that do?
It's a component on the module that helps enhance signal integrity, especially on motherboards, with longer traces to the RAM slots. Basically, it allows for higher, more stable clock speeds. These CKD modules go up to 6,400 MTs.
Ah, so cleaner signal, higher speeds, makes sense for performance enthusiasts.
Exactly. And for notebooks, they have the signature line core DDR5 SODIMM. That includes PMIC and on-die ECC.
Okay, PMIC and on-die ECC on a SODIMM. Can you break those down quickly for us?
Sure. PMIC is Power Management Integrated Circuit. It manages power delivery right there on the memory module itself. Helps with stability, especially at higher speeds.
Got it. And on-die ECC.
That's error correction code, but built directly onto the individual memory chips. It can detect and correct single-bit memory errors automatically. Makes the RAM more reliable, less prone to crashes or data corruption. Both are good features for stable, high-performance computing, especially in laptops.
Good explanation. Who else is pushing DDR5?
D-Skill's really going for high capacity and high speed. They've got kits available now up to a massive 256 gigabytes.
256 gigs of RAM? How?
Using 464 gigabyte modules, running at DDR5 6000. They also have 128 GB kits using two 64 GB modules, running faster at DDR5 6400.
Wow, who needs that much RAM?
Like content creators working with huge video files, engineers doing complex simulations, anyone running seriously memory-hungry workstation tasks.
Right, the extreme users. Anything special needed to run those huge 64 GB modules?
Yes, important point. You'll likely need a motherboard BIOS update, probably one from 2025 or newer, to properly support these 64 GB DIMMs. So check compatibility before you buy.
Good advice. Always check the QVL, the qualified vendor list. Okay, one more big player in memory, SK Hynix, especially focused on AI, right?
Absolutely. They were showcasing their latest stuff at HPE Discover 2025. They're really pushing leadership in AI memory. Highlight is their 12-layer HBM4.
HBM4, high bandwidth memory, fourth gen. What's the headline spec?
Capable of processing over 2 terabytes of data per second.
2 terabytes per second? That's incredible bandwidth. Is it out yet?
They've supplied samples to major customers already, and their 12-layer HBM3E, which has 36 GB capacity, has actually been in mass production since September 2024.
So they're delivering high-capacity, high-bandwidth memory right now. What else are they focused on for AI?
Also DDR5-based server DIMMs, naturally.
Yeah.
PCIe 5.0 NVMe SSDs, optimized specifically for AI computing and data centers, and they're big on CXL.
CXL, Compute Express Link, how are they using that?
With their CMM DDR5 modules, CXL memory modules. These offer, they say, 50% greater capacity and 30% more bandwidth compared to conventional DDR5 DIMM setups. It's all about feeding those hungry AI processors more data, faster.
Clearly positioning themselves right at the heart of the AI hardware boom. Okay, looking further ahead now, what's next on the horizon?
Well, Kioxia is sampling UFS 4.1 embedded flash memory.
UFS 4.1, that's for phones and mobile devices, right?
Primarily, yes.
Yeah.
Next-gen mobile apps, think 5G, on-device AI, but also important for ADAS advanced driver assistance systems in cars.
It's the improvement in 4.1.
Better performance, better power efficiency. They're using their 8th generation BiCS flash 3D NAND, and also a new technology called CBA.
CBA.
CMOS, directly bonded to array. It's a manufacturing technique.
Right.
Basically, they build the control circuitry, the CMOS part,
yeah,
directly underneath the flash memory cells, the array. Yeah.
And why is that better?
It allows for higher density packing, more storage in the same space, and creates shorter data paths between the memory and the controller. That translates to better speed and lower power consumption. Really important for battery-powered devices like phones or complex systems like ADAS, where efficiency matters.
Very interesting. Okay, now, let's talk about something that sounds almost like science fiction. Cerabyte, ceramic nanomemory.
Yeah, this one is really out there, but potentially revolutionary. Cerabyte has this incredibly ambitious plan. They're targeting 100 petabytes per rack.
100 petabytes in a single rack. By when?
By 2030. It's aimed at long-term data archiving.
100 petabytes. That's just astronomical. How on earth does it work?
It's wild. The core idea is storing data at the atomic level. They use femtosecond lasers, incredibly short pulses of light, to etch data points onto super thin 100 micrometer glass panels that have a 10 nanometer ceramic film coating.
Lasers etching data onto ceramic coated glass at the nanoscale. Okay, what are the supposed benefits? Speed. Durability.
All of the above, potentially. They project transfer speeds over 2 gigabytes per second, which is fast for archive storage, access times under 10 seconds. But the really big claims are durability.
How durable?
Exceeding 100 years. Compare that to maybe 7 to 15 years for LTO tape,
yeah,
the current standard for long-term archiving.
Wow, 100 plus years versus maybe 15. That's a massive difference for archives and cost.
This is the other potential game changer. They project a total cost of ownership dropping to just $6 to $8 per petabyte month by 2030.
$6 to $8 per petabyte month. What's the cost now for tape?
Today, it's more like $7,000 to $8,000 per petabyte month.
So 1,000 times cheaper. That sounds almost too good to be true. What are the catches, the hurdles? This is such a radical shift.
That's the key question, isn't it? The potential is enormous, but the challenges are equally huge. Scaling up production reliably, ensuring manufacturing quality is perfect at that nanoscale, and then just convincing entire industries, data centers, archives, to adopt a completely new, unproven technology for their most valuable long-term data. It's a massive undertaking.
Yeah, overcoming inertia and proving reliability at that scale will be tough.
But if they pull it off, yeah. I mean, it could fundamentally change how we approach long-term data storage. Moving beyond magnetic tape, maybe even optical discs, to something far denser, more durable, and ultimately cheaper. It's definitely one to watch.
Absolutely. Okay, finally, before we wrap up, we need to touch on security. Always critical. There's an update regarding AMD processors.
Yes, a crucial one.
Yeah.
New side-channel vulnerabilities have been identified affecting AMD Ryzen and EPYC processors. The specific identifiers are CVE-2024-36348, CVE-2024-36349, CVE-2024-36350, and CVE-2024-36357.
Side-channel vulnerabilities. Can you explain briefly what that means?
Sure. It's not like a direct hack where someone steals data. Instead, these flaws could potentially allow an attacker, usually one who already has some level of local access to the machine, to infer sensitive data. They do this by observing subtle things like timing differences or power consumption patterns as the processor works. It's a clever, indirect way to potentially get information.
Okay, so it requires local access, but still serious. What's being done?
AMD is aware and is working on firmware updates, AGESA updates, and other mitigations. It really underscores how important it is for everyone to stay current with microcode updates from the CPU vendor and also apply OS-level patches as they become available. Keeping systems updated is the best defense.
And just to be very clear for our listeners, we are reporting on the information about these CVEs as provided in the source material. We aren't endorsing any particular viewpoint, just relaying the facts about the vulnerabilities and AMD's response.
Exactly. It's important security information users should be aware of.
So quite a journey we've taken today, from NAS getting more transparent and cloud connected to super rugged SSDs, breakthroughs in mobile storage speed, shifting memory prices, and even glimpses of ceramic memory and security updates. What's the big takeaway for you?
For me, it really highlights that this world of storage and memory, it's not static at all. It's incredibly dynamic. These aren't just chips and drives. They are truly the fundamental building blocks for, well, everything digital, our lives, the future of AI. It all rests on this foundation.
Yeah, we've seen innovations making things more user-friendly, like with Assustor and QNAP's easier setups, but also pushing the boundaries for specialized uses, like those Team Group Industrial SSDs or the SK Hynix AI memory. And the price shifts in DRAM and NAND, that affects everyone.
Absolutely. The pace of change in the physical hardware that underpins our digital world is just relentless.
It really is. And it leaves us with a final thought, perhaps. As data just keeps growing exponentially, doubling faster and faster, what comes next? What breakthroughs, maybe even beyond the silicon we rely on now or the ceramics Cerabyte is proposing, will we actually need to handle the sheer scale, the petabytes and exabytes of data that tomorrow promises?
That's the big question. We're pushing current tech hard, but are fundamentally new approaches needed down the line? Mm-hmm. Fascinating to think about.